welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 118th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's show is going to be destructive, because I've got some anger left over from Star Wars Celebration, and then we watched Fate of the Furious that just blew up everything. And I basically talked about what we're going to talk about in this episode, because EJ and I are going to talk about the Fate of the Furious and Star Wars The Last Jedi. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic EJ Farina.
I'm a little nervous about getting into this podcast because you have some anger that maybe the viewers are not ready for this episode. Then this is not like your nerd rage anger. You just seem hyped and ready to go.
I know, you already heard like the clench of the microphone happen where I was like, I'm just going to grab this thing and yell at it. But Star Wars Celebration was so frustrating to me. Like, it was really frustrating. And I'm still trying to decide whether or not I want to write like an op-ed about it, because I want to get a press pass to Star Wars Celebration again. And so it's that balance of being a journalist and also trying, you don't want to get kicked out of the event again.
Yeah, I can definitely see from not going to the event and seeing it on social media. I had a friend say there was a line to get into the line, to get into the line to check out at the store. Like, it just, the overall mayhem of it sounds crazy. And I have to ask you, this is something I was wondering. I saw everything you were seeing, though I wasn't in person, on YouTube. How does that make you feel that I got to see the trailer the same time you did? I got to see the panels that you did. Maybe not all of them in full, you know, just, I know being there's a different thing, but yeah, I thought it was weird that I got to see everything you did and not be as stressed.
Yes, you bring up valid points. The only solace that I have that I bring back with myself, I think that's the right word. I don't know, the only calming influence that I have, and I don't even know if this is worth it or not. And if you're listening, tell me if it's worth it or not so I can make a decision for next year. Because I got two posters. I got a Last Jedi poster, and then I got a Carrie Fisher memorial poster. And those posters are going for $150 a piece on eBay right now.
Well, the eBay thing is, I hate that. I hate that scalping. But no, that it, there's perks of going to it, and I definitely think the experience you had, as stressful as it was, I don't think you can take back. And you got a really cool poster, and you got to see like the Carrie Fisher, the panel with Mark Hamill. So there's cool things. I just seems like it was a lot of stress, and more than any convention that I've even heard of being like this, that this just seemed ridiculous.
Well, I've gone to San Diego Comic-Con, and Hall H fits 5,000 people. And I've gotten up at 4:30 in the morning, and I'm almost guaranteed to get into the building. Pretty much almost guaranteed, maybe a little bit of wait outside until people come out, you know, because there's different panels and people go in for certain panels and then they come out and then people come in. And so if you got in line at 4:30 in the morning or got up at 4:30 in the morning, you're usually going to get into that building. I got up at 4:30 in the morning and I was in the room next to the room next to the room for the Last Jedi panel, and I was in the second room for the 40th anniversary. But my problem is there was people that got in line at 9:37 the night before for the 40th anniversary, and they did not get into the room. Like, people slept overnight and did not get into the room. And this is where I would like to have a conversation with myself about it. But I want to have. I'm trying to figure out what I need to write, how I write this, because I have the article as like, we all need to learn from the failures of Star Wars Celebration, because there was people that got in line and slept overnight and didn't even get into the event that they wanted to go to. And I feel like that's something wrong. There's something definitely wrong there. And then also, when you buy a ticket to Star Wars Celebration, you have a remote expectation of being able to see the events that are going on. That's why you buy the ticket. Like, I understand waiting in line and doing things and stuff like that, but like, they should have a job. Reed Expo, like, their job should be to make sure that the most amount of people possible can see the main event. But they put the main events in the smallest rooms at Star Wars Celebration. So that's where I have issues.
I definitely think this is something that's going to be definitely kinked out. I've heard these complaints from a lot of people. Maybe someone does need to put it into an editorial op-ed fashion. So just to kind of clear the thoughts and get people to agree, because I think what they did for fans as a fan service with what was shown product-wise was awesome. Like the Battlefront trailer, the Rebel, like there was just a lot given out to fans, which was cool. But the actual event, I definitely think, just needs to be kind of finessed a little bit better, because there was a lot of fans that I do think got the short end of the stick. Like you said, if I'm going to go to any convention, even when we went to MegaCon, we bought that ticket or we had the booth or what, we had a potential chance. It did feel like it was like a Hunger Games race just to see a panel. It was crazy.
Some of the complaints that I've heard are complaints that we've been hearing for 4+ years. And that's why I feel like it's time for an op-ed, because like I was there Thursday. And then Reed Expo made an adjustment on Friday, and there was more crowd control. How is Reed Expo not prepared for the crowds that they pre-sold tickets to?
Yeah, there's just something that needs to be worked on, and I definitely think you are the person that could probably at least focus the thoughts a little bit better.
And that was the biggest thing. It's like I got up at 4:30 in the morning for those 2 days, and then I had a press pass to the Rebels panel on Saturday, but I still had to get up early to make sure I got through the security lines, to make sure I got to where I needed to be to pick up my press pass in time, to make sure I got to the panel on time. So I still didn't even get to sleep on Saturday. And then by the end of Saturday, I was like, man, I am so tired. I am so tired. And I was like, do I want to wake up for a fourth day early to try to get a pass to go to the Mark Hamill final panel? And I was like, no, I don't. I came home Saturday night and I was just like, wow. Part of me, I was like, am I getting old? What's going on? Was the convention broken? Where, like, what was the issue with it? And it was probably a combination of it all, of like not eating right, old, and then the convention not being run well, where you had to get things. And well, that's the other thing. For the big panels, you were only allowed to get 2 wristbands per day. What we did, and what we did the first day and we did the second day, is we went in line and we got wristbands for 2 panels, and then we got into the Last Jedi panel. And then when we got up into the front of the line, we're like, okay, I'm going to rip off the Warwick Davis panel, because I'll give up Warwick Davis for Last Jedi. Sorry, Warwick. He actually ended up being the most entertaining guy at the convention. But so I ripped it off. But that means that somebody who wanted to go to the Warwick Davis panel probably couldn't, because I ripped off my wristband. Like, so there's a flaw to the system of the wristbands when you're in that giant type line as well. So there's multiple flaws with what happened. And I just, my biggest thing is you're taking in so much money, and then you're not prepared to deliver on what with all these fans that are in there.
Yeah, it will have to be definitely worked out, because I don't think any less fans are going to go next year at Star Wars. This isn't going to hurt them enough, but I definitely think it should be worked out.
Well, that's the thing, is all these conventions are growing at exponential rates. So saying like, oh, we weren't prepared, like there hasn't been a downturn in convention attendance in the past 10 years. It's always growing by leaps and bounds of thousands and thousands of people. So I mean,
it's never going to be fixed then. It will never be a clean... You're never going to make a convention perfect.
Well, no.
And the more it grows, the more it's going to get worse.
There are fixes to those issues, because I've had plenty. I was sitting in line forever. I mean, I had to do was think about this.
The amount of fans are going more. This is a complaint that honestly I just can't get behind, because I don't. The fans are going to be the problem of this. There's too many people going to these things.
No, you have to provide a venue big enough for the fans to attend. And San Diego,
they should limit the ticket sales.
Or it sells out.
Limit the sales.
Right. Either or you can come up. When you have this much demand, you're making money. You know, and so there is a way to fix this problem, because there is money to be made and there's a demand. So like having a demand and having lots of money, like those are two things that should make solving problems easier. And like for me, San Diego Comic-Con, right across the street is a baseball field. like literally across the street. They could move Hall H across the street to the baseball field and fit 30,000 people, and they probably still would fill it up.
Yeah.
So more people could see the event. You travel out there. I mean, I met people from Utah. I met people from all over the place. I traveled, slept over, and still couldn't go to the places where they wanted to go after spending all their money. And then I'll end my rant on Comic-Con, Star Wars Celebration, all of them. But Star Wars Celebration, I went to the Rebels panel on Saturday, and I had a press pass. So I was in there first, and I had the press area. And it wasn't really close up. It was a good distance to let people in the room who had waited overnight. And people started lining up at 3 o'clock in the morning for the Star Wars Rebels panel. What happened is I'm sitting there and I was like, I see this group come in and they take all the front row and they take probably the first like 10 front rows of the thing. And I was like, who are those people? And I was like, the lady's like, oh, those are the VIP people that paid $700 a ticket. They get first in. And so even if you slept overnight, you were still not getting...
That was your choice.
I know. I'm just letting you know, like, that's...
I can't fault the people who spent more money over the people who did their own will to spend the night there. I don't know. I will be on the side for the people who spent the money.
I know my time is worth $500 an hour, so I would definitely make money paying $700 for a ticket and not waiting in line. That was a Tony quote of this weekend. It's a tough battle because... I think the fans deserve more, and I think that the corporation is making lots of money on them. I want to say there's an imbalance, and that's why I'm having a tough time with that article in my head. I'm like, okay, what is that balance? I'm trying to find that solution and stuff like that of what, where we should go and how things should equal out. Because, I mean, MegaCon has 100,000 people go to it, and it was a little bumpy last year when they had the new ownership come through and people... We're having issues with pictures and autographs, but that's more of a computer glitch kind of thing that was going on with that over there. But I mean, like, there are ways to handle crowds. I mean, I know there is. I mean, you go to Disney and they handle a million plus people a day and you get through the lines and you wait, but like they still have figured out ways to move you through the lines as quickly as possible. So, I mean, like, I know that there's a lot of money to be had and to be made, and they made a shit ton of money. I'm just trying to figure out what that solution is and how we fix it. And like, I know there'll never be a perfect situation, but I know that it needs to get better.
This might be where Monkeys Fighting Robots becomes a reality show for the next 7 minutes.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real, the real world.
Do you want to jump to the new topic? Because I don't have anything more to add.
Well, I mean, that's the point of a podcast is we're supposed to debate this stuff.
Well, yeah, I don't have anything to add. I've never ran a convention. As you said, I've never gone to enough of these. So I wasn't trying.
I mean, you have Lady Gaga experience where you paid extra for a ticket. So I mean, like, it's, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to get out of you, you know, an opinion from it and stuff.
Literally never put thoughts into this. Like I said, I got to watch all of this at home. Same thing I did with Coachella. People paid hundreds of dollars. I got to sit at home and watch Lady Gaga at Coachella and have a grand old time on my laptop. So they're just things I've never really had to think about and or face issues of because never put into mind. I think it's crazy that people wanted to spend the night when, especially if there is VIP tickets available, what makes you think you putting in your 12 hours overnight is going to be better than people who put more money? It's just weird. So yeah, that's why I don't really have much to add to it.
No, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, there are other things. Is like Ryan Johnson, he came out and spent 4 hours on like Thursday night in the people waiting with lines, you know, waiting in who slept overnight. So I mean, like, there are the perks that happen. There's crazy experiences, but you can't expect that to like happen when you're waiting in line. The best part of Star Wars Celebration shouldn't be the friends I guess, and this makes me sound really callous. It shouldn't be the friends I've made waiting 6 hours in line.
Oh, that made you sound really callous about this? Because this whole thing has sounded very callous.
What do you mean?
You've just sounded a little, I don't know. It's just something about the attitude you have towards it. I don't know. I guess I can't see anything you've gone through, especially I wasn't there. So yeah, it's a very interesting to hear anger towards it, because I've heard nothing more positive about you. You've never said one thing happy about the whole celebration. It's just been complaining. So that's where I'm just like, Well, yeah, I just want to talk about The Last Jedi now, because that trailer is a good, that's a good plot to put our anger at.
Well, that was the thing, is, I mean, the other point of Star Wars Celebration is that, like, we didn't learn anything new. You know, the whole point of Celebration was for them to, like, reveal stuff and to show stuff, but there was no, like, Han Solo thing. There was no, no new movies announced or anything like that, and...
Well, they never promised any of that.
They didn't promise that. But I mean, it was still like, okay, they had a 40th anniversary reunion. Okay, great. We knew that already. And the people that came on stage, like for Last Jedi, they kind of talked about stuff, but nothing got revealed. Like there was nothing new.
It's so funny how you talk about how you guys didn't get Star Wars stuff for so many years, and now they gave you a Last Jedi panel. You know, they just gave you so much, and you're like, but there wasn't enough.
I didn't get
a Han Solo thing this time. It's just so funny to hear it.
They didn't give fucking anything. I mean, like, that's the point, is that, like...
they gave a trailer. I thought that, from what I saw, the Carrie Fisher thing, I thought that was beautiful. I thought they delivered what they should have for this year. If they had more movies coming out this year, or if Han Solo was probably more than just test footage probably shot, then yeah, but...
I'm talking about I'm sure the average... But from a news point of view, like, there was no new information that came out. There was no big announcements. There was nothing that you didn't already know before you went to Star Wars Celebration. You know, there was stuff for Rebels that they announced and everything like that, and that was that there. But, like, as far as, like, movie news, there was nothing new that we didn't know before. And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, as a fan, like, yes, I was in the room next to the room, and, like, I was in this big auditorium with 4,000 fans that love Star Wars. And so that 40th anniversary panel was great, because people were crying and people were happy and elated. And when Harrison Ford came out, yes, there was good things for it. But, like, my anger is towards, I feel bad for the nerd that got there at 9:37 the night before and was just, because they didn't announce that they weren't getting into the panel. You know, it wasn't like you got in line. Everybody who slept over the night before, they thought they were getting in the room. They didn't convey, they didn't communicate to the people that they're like, hey, you're not going to get it. And I mean, like, that's, I feel like there's a certain part of that is on the convention people. And you still don't want to bite on it.
I literally have nothing to add to this.
And it's okay if you are negative. You're like, listen, those people made a choice.
What do you want to do, like, walk around to every single one and be like, sorry, we don't know the percentage of you guys getting in. Go home, stay here. People were going to stay no matter what. This is not going to change. That's why I said I don't want to say I don't care, but I have.
It's fine if you don't care.
This isn't going to change next year. The same amount of people, if not more, are going to go.
No, because because when I came in on Thursday, there was a girl walking around with a counter, and I was like, "Hey, what's the number for?" And she's like, "This is the number of people that stood in line outside that weren't part of the people that slept over the night before." And I was like, "Okay, what number am I?" And she's like, "Oh, you're 4,300." So I was, when I got there at 5:15 in the morning on Thursday, I was 4,300 in line on the outside. And then I know on Friday, the line was even bigger. It was 2 to 3 times bigger than it was when I was there the same time the previous day. And that's my biggest thing is that I believe, or I think, if you're making money hand over fist, which I think Reed Expo is with Star Wars Celebration, that they should try to have the biggest events be shown to the most amount of people. And that's my opinion. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Nothing against your opinion. First off, didn't know we were talking about this, so I was just kind of like, oh, I just thought we were talking about trailers and movies. I personally was not prepared for deconstruction of conventions and how they work.
I'm sorry. It was just, it was one of the things I wanted to talk about with Star Wars Celebration. So, I mean, like, it's what happened. It was kind of built up to the whole, like, that was a whole reason why I need to see a brainless movie like Fate of the Furious on Saturday night.
I'm almost certain that probably did help you relax a little bit. Other than it being like a high amp kind of film, you're probably like, well, at least I'm not stressed about Dom and Crook and Company and these cars.
And do you want to talk about Fate of the Furious, sir?
I don't know. There's I don't know. I feel like I'm not going to match your level of that opening segment. No, I have to say, I personally didn't think I was going to love The Fate of the Furious. I've liked all the movies in the franchise, but other than Fast Five, this is the first one I've like loved. I had a grand old time. I'm really surprised by it.
I enjoyed it, but I don't have, the farther I get away from it, the more I'm just like, okay, it was brainless fun. But I know that like you talked about the heart in our pre-show area and stuff like that. And I was definitely missing Paul Walker. Like Clint Eastwood's son doesn't do it for me. Like I think he was a poorly written character, or he should have been, it shouldn't have been Clint Eastwood's son. It should have been somebody more comedic.
Well, Scott Eastwood is not a good actor. I think he's made that point very well with his cameo in Suicide Squad. Don't worry, you won't remember him in that either. His character was, I also don't know why we needed his character. Like, we had Mr. Nobody. Like, Kurt Russell was doing a damn good job eating up and chewing up that scenery. Don't know why his character was there. He is there to kind of be the new Paul Walker, but I personally wasn't missing Paul Walker. Nothing against him. I all respect to like the man Paul Walker, but the Brian O'Connor character, I don't think he made or broke this franchise. This is Vin Diesel's piece, and now starting to become Dwayne Johnson's, also maybe Jason Statham's now. Like, I think they replaced him enough that I didn't really need him.
Vin Diesel, he's just kind of, he was the villain, so like that lead actor kind of goes away. Like, he's no longer the lead actor because he's like moves to the villain side.
And he was far from a villain, though.
I get that. I'm just telling, I'm walking into the film. The Rock's character is so over the top in this. He's like WWE steroids. And then Jason Statham killed some of the Fast and Furious crew. How can you root for that guy? And then he saves a baby.
Well, the baby scene, probably my favorite. I don't know what Justice League or Wonder Woman or any of these other movies I'm really hyped for have planned, but this is going to be one of my favorite movies, like scenes of the year. I just was like, oh my God, because I saw none of the trailers. So I just was like, why does Jason Statham have a baby? Why is Jason Statham fighting with a baby? It just, the jokes he made in between, he really needs this franchise, and the franchise really needs him. He's perfect for it, and it's perfect for him. I think he's going to be the perfect addition.
The baby scene is the best part of the film. Like,
I liked the New York scene a lot. I just thought, like, there's personal fears I have of, like all these control cars. Like, basically, all these things can just be hacked now because of how technological, like, advanced our cars are. So the zombie cars, as she called it, just blew my mind. So that was something I thought was really, really cool. They have good set pieces in this movie. The story in between isn't always the cleanest, but the set pieces and what they do and how they choreograph this is always just phenomenal.
In my head, I had World War Z zombies when she talked about zombie cars. Like, so my head, I just blew it out into like this insane like funnel of cars, like defying physics kind of thing. Like,
almost was building to it. There's a scene where they all kind of like piled up on each other in a wreck, and I was just like, that's funny you mentioned that, because that was like the first thing I'm like, oh my God, are we gonna hit like massive like tower of like cars? And I was like, oh damn, we didn't get that. We didn't get War of Z like you called it.
And then you had Eastwood driving a car, and I was like, no, get him out. Like, he didn't belong in a car. Like, he did not belong in a car.
He definitely should have been the one kind of, like, in the control center yelling at them over, like, a headpiece. Kind of what Kurt Russell was doing. There was other things. Like, Helen Mirren should have been in a car. Like, if Scott Eastwood got in one, Mirren needed to be in one and be just as badass as I know she can be.
I do like the fact that this series is starting to bring in older, more respected actors. Like a Helen Mirren or a Kurt Russell. And everybody else has their own respect. But I mean, like, until you get to Kurt Russell's age or Helen Mirren's age, you're just not, they're always going to have more. They're going to have more respect. And I was very excited when she showed up.
Well, like, Charlize's Oscar can only get her so far with respect. It's like, well, yeah, you're an Oscar winner. Thank you, Charlize, for blessing our movie. But then Helen Mirren comes and you're like, well, now here's the true saint of film right here. So yeah, she definitely classed up the film and really brought, I keep comparing it to an American James Bond, and she brought that James Bond feeling to it. I know she's English, and just something about her being in it, I'm like, oh, you're at home. And I'm. It's so funny that she wanted to be in this movie. She asked Vin Diesel. She ran into him at a party one day. She's told the story where she was just like, so I have to be in your movies. I love them. And he was like, yeah, cool, I will find a spot for you. It happened we have English villains, so it helped.
That's funny. And Charlize Theron, she doesn't drive a car, and she's an aggressive typer. Like, it's a weird...
Oh my god, that is the greatest way of describing her hacker. She just aggressively typed really, really fast, or yelled at the Asian guy to type for her.
Right, she outsourced her hacking.
The true American way.
I know, because I saw an interview with her, and she doesn't know how to type. So she actually said that she aggressively types because she doesn't know what she's doing. So she was just like, bada. And so that kind of, and she also talked about like, she never gets into a fight. If you think about it, she never really moves. Like I said, there's that one scene where she walks in, where they blow up stuff, where she makes her introduction, but like, she doesn't move at all. And it's an interesting villain type.
She was very, it reminds me of like I keep comparing it to like an old Bond villain where like she's not doing the heavy lifting. She has a bunch of henchmen. That was, I think it was a cool dynamic, especially to have a female as the villain. Usually you can see Jason Statham or Luke Evans, who is Jason Statham's brother, who was a villain. You could see them like, you know, fisticuffs basically with Vin Diesel or The Rock. And what was she going to do? Fight Michelle Rodriguez, which I was waiting for that fight. Did not get it. But yeah, she really couldn't do something like that. So I thought making her this type of villain was a good way and adds a different type of villain to their movies.
And I know the whole entire movie's over the top and a lot of it deals with cars, hence Fast and the Furious. But I really, really wanted a long Vin Diesel Christoph fight. The dude from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that was... Though the end of that fight got me thinking of what an R-rated Fast and the Furious movie would look like and how good that would be. Because he like basically like snaps his neck with a punch.
No, the finishing move is amazing.
But yeah, I definitely agree that that fight scene should have been extended. Like you said, I know these are about the cars, but you had that beautiful prison fight scene or the plane fight scene that isn't really based around... you know, driving a vehicle or what is going on. So that could have been extended, but that finishing move was definitely like, that was one of the few times I was like, holy shit. Like, I was surprised that they pushed it that far. And, you know, speaking of over the top, in that same scene, I had to laugh out loud and just glee when The Rock literally threw a torpedo. And I was just like, this is it. You guys have jumped the shark in the best way. You've accepted you're dumb and don't, like, believe in physics. Thank you.
I don't. Well, I see... See, that for you, it's the torpedo. It's for me when Tyrese brings the Lambo to Russia to drive on ice. I'm like, come
as
on.
As much as I hate Tyrese's character, at least they made that a joke, though. At least he got onto the ice and they were like, yeah, horrible decision, you moron. Like, that was pretty funny how they at least turned it around on him.
Oh, see, I love Tyrese's character in this movie because, like, I think he's the epitome of what this movie's about. Like, he thinks his shit don't stink, but it stinks so much.
And maybe I am supposed to kind of cringe at his character, but just every time he makes a joke, I'm just like, there was like 20 jokes ahead of you that were funnier. But yeah, he's needed in the films. Like, as much as I don't like him, he definitely adds something. And I love his dynamic, especially with Ludacris. For those two not being the strongest actors, they have such a good dynamic that... It's something I guess I really love about this film is you can't teach chemistry, and this crew really does actually enjoy themselves, and you can tell, and I think that's something I really like.
I was dying laughing when Tyrese was making fun of Scott Eastwood.
Oh, well, yes, that was, someone had to, and I'm glad it was Tyrese. Though The Rock has some good, you know, like WWE style punchlines he throws at Statham and stuff, it needed to be Tyrese to make fun of Scott Eastwood.
And then in the credits, it says Little Nobody on IMDb for Scott Eastwood. And that's kind of apropos.
I wish it was Little, like a rapper. I wish it was like L-I-L Nobody, because that would have been the best thing since all the rappers named him. I was just like, can we not have made him like Little Nobody? And it would have been like Scott Eastwood's rap career that we need.
And then the kids' soccer turn. This movie is so fucking all over the place.
Again, I want to know the connection with that soccer thing, but it's one of those films I make fun of, like I talk down of like Kong Skull Island for being kind of just mindless. But I saw more potential in that. Where this, I don't really expect it to teach me a lesson or be anything more than a popcorn film. So it to be I think it's the best popcorn film ever. Like, this is what, when you think of just a mindless, like, fun entertainment with an actual decent plot to get you from point A to point B to point C, I think this is it. I think this is what the summer movie season should be about, where it's fun over the top, but there's some kind of soul deep in there, even if it's hidden under all that like plastic. There's a soul in there.
I was trying to figure out soul. Because this is one of those movies where I'm like, it's the eighth one, and you're talking about like the soul of the film. And I guess that gives it...
To me, 1 through 4 are in a different franchise. Once they hit Fast 5, they started making movies. Like, 1 through 4 are fun, little, just ridiculous. But Fast 5 to, you know, 6, 7, and 8, they're starting to make polished pieces. Like, that's when I really start looking at the franchise. From what the Point Break remake was in 2001 with Fast and the Furious, it's fun for what it is. But like I know you have like 8 movies. And I'm like, no, there's 4. We only acknowledge Fast 5 and on. Those are the good ones. These are like, this is like Old Testament, New Testament. We're in New Testament now. We only pay attention to this. Like, ignore the rest.
Okay. You ignore the ones with like a $20 million budget. And the ones with $250 million budget. And I had something that I wanted to say about this film. 5. And I got lost because there's 8 of them. Oh, so I really like the stuff in Cuba. I thought when you talk about soul and beauty and everything like that, like I was just like, this it had nice colors. You saw a lot of really good stuff. You saw the vintageness of Cuba. I thought they did a good job. And then
shot in Cuba. That's the biggest thing, is it looked so beautiful. Like, yeah. You were definitely right of how gorgeous it did look.
But then I was like, okay, where did somebody, why wasn't there an editor that came in and said, hey, I think we're perfectly fine starting off the movie with the car in flames finishing first forwards, not backwards. Like, it's like, oh, no. This is 8. We can't finish the race going forwards. We have to finish the race going backwards on fire, getting ready to explode.
Do you mean the actual production meeting for that scene that happened? That's exactly verbatim what happened. Yeah, of course. This reminds me of what I liked about slasher franchises. Because there's movies that don't really get up to movie 8 anymore, where you would see the Friday the 13th movies, and now you're getting to the point where you're like, well, how do you top yourself in Jason X? So you send them to space, which I keep saying, these movies are going to space.
They are, but you can't drive in space.
Oh, you can steal spaceships, though. Like, the whole racing aspect is different when we're racing to the moon. Like, or we can land on the moon and have fucking, like, little, like, dune buggies on the moon. Oh, we can do it. It just needs... We need the Moonraker. We need the Moonraker of the franchise. Like, someone laser beams, and we need to go to space. I should be the one to write that Fast and Furious movie.
It is funny because, I mean... You and I were totally at opposite ends of the spectrum a little bit with that Star Wars Celebration conversation, and I was quite angry, and you were quite put off. But now, like, I'm smiling, and so there's got to be something with this stupid franchise.
And that's exactly what it is. It's like, I hate when I see critics get a little cynical with this franchise, and I'm like, you are missing the 100% of glee joy that they really do bring, and they don't try to be anything more than what they are. That's what I just like. I this movie is just the most, it's just Vin Diesel wanting to have fun with his friends, and I don't want to knock that. It doesn't feel as corporate as some other movies, but no, I like it. I just, it's fun. Like you said, we're both smiling about this, and I like that.
Talking about Star Wars, they do a lot of things with color palettes because they go from location to location to location. And then the thing is, like with this one, I really like the way it looked in Cuba. And then you went to like an inorganic place like New York. And then you went to Russia. I think you went to
Berlin. Was
Germany.
Berlin wasn't that long of a
set. Yeah, it was piece. It was a dark piece. But like you had those three major players there. I wanted the whites to be whiter. If we're being critical, there was something off with the colors of the whites in Russia. As if I'm being film critical. Because you had the bright neon cars, you could have done some amazing stuff with the snow, and I felt like it was, I think because it was on ice, is because it was like a little bit muted. I don't know, you know.
I, they found the perfect director for the franchise. I think F. Gary Gray did well. They're just leaning that cinematographer. Like, I definitely agree with you that the aesthetic is almost there. Just a little bit more finesse would have made the, like, something like the Russia set piece just gorgeous.
And F. Gary Gray, well, F. Gary Gray, he did the Italian Job. I was just, my head, I automatically, as soon as I see the Italian Job, my head, I have to stop and I have to go through the whole entire, like, mini chase scene in my head. Like, is this, hit on a, like, okay, and we're done. And that was a, that movie's awesome. Like, that's definitely where they need to kind of be with this franchise.
And I think, yeah, he's the person to bring it to. And what he did with, even what he did with the comedy of Friday and the heist dynamic of Set It Off in his past films, he really did bring everything he's worked on to this piece. And I think this is, I would put F. Gary Gray in terms, I want him to do a Bond movie. Like, we keep talking about a Bond of color. Can we get a Bond director of color as well? Like, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think the English people might be just a tad bit more racist than the Americans.
A little bit. That's why we can't have goddamn Idris Elba as, like, Bond, and he's the perfect choice.
Oh, man. That's crazy. Do you want to go back into Star Wars territory and talk about Last Jedi? Did I scare you off? This was also a big weekend because the Star Wars Last Jedi trailer came out, or teaser, or whatever you want to call that hot pile of garbage that came out. God, I'm still angry about Star Wars. EJ, you got to talk about it for a second.
It's the definition of a teaser. It is not a trailer, where I thought the Thor Ragnarok teaser, quote unquote, was a trailer. I'm like, just call it a trailer, give it to us. This was a teaser. They showed you nothing. If not, they just showed you clips that was in The Force Awakens, now with just different characters. It wasn't that good. Maybe this trailer is a good sum up of how you felt about Celebration. It was just like mediocre.
It's just, I was just like, okay. Finn, we knew that Finn was beat up, but why do you have to still show him? Like, you could have shown him running or doing something, or just being, like something, like moving.
Well, he's waiting for his prince to come kiss him and wake him up, because it is a Disney movie, so
waiting
for Poe to come and wake him up with a kiss, which would be awesome. Or BB-8. I would take BB-8 waking me up.
Oh, man, the love for BB-8 also. I'm an R2 guy. Damn it,
I like C-3PO, actually. I'm one of the few fans that I like that little snobby, gay, sassy gold robot. But BB-8 just has something that he has what the Fast and the Furious franchise has. He just puts a smile on my face like a Groot, where you're just like, you get it. This one non-talking thing is just the most wholesome thing ever. Love him.
I just want to know what's going on with the Force and what, like, where the Jedi's went. And I mean, I know that's the whole point of it, is just be amped up for it and want some more information. I'm just hoping that I get some Luke Skywalker badassness, just even a glimpse of it. Like, Luke Skywalker needs to wield the lightsaber, and he needs to kick some ass. And I'm hoping that we get that, and we're not just, like, moving full. I need some closure. Like, I got closure with some of the other characters. I need closure with Luke Skywalker, and I'm just hoping I get it.
I think it's there. I liked his little Mr. Miyagi scene where you saw him in the distance training her. Like, I think we're going to get it. I just hope Mark Hamill doesn't die in this film. I hope we don't get the end of Luke Skywalker. I feel it coming, just the way his character arc's been building. If not this movie, I think Luke has to die. Don't know how fans are going to deal with that if we get rid of all the older ones. I'm interested. I don't think the trailer helped or hurt it. I'm waiting for an actual moment to actually grasp my, you know, oh, this is the trailer I want, or that's the still that I'm looking for. We'll see.
Standing in line for hours upon hours, we fans and I, we came up with the Saving Private Ryan theory with Star Wars, is that Luke is the last Ryan. He can't die because they killed Han Solo off. Carrie Fisher's gone. Like, if you kill Luke Skywalker off, like, that's no bueno. Like, you gotta keep one.
That's a good way of putting it. Wow.
So we think that somebody's rewriting somewhere furiously, you know, like ah!
You come up with the best terms, like aggressive family films, the Save a Private Ryan Jedi. You're good at this.
Ah, man. I just wish we got a little bit more. Oh, and speaking of C-3PO, Peter Daniels is the guy that you like, because you saw him in the 40th anniversary panel. Like,
yes,
he is a diva of divas.
And it's so funny how much C-3PO is in him. There's especially in this franchise, where I don't think Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker. like, Mark Hamill is awesome. Luke Skywalker is Luke Skywalker. But seeing him, just, I'm like, oh, you live and breathe this character. Thank you, Mr. Sass. I love it.
What's going on this week?
I'm seeing Unforgettable, which is the Katherine Heigl, I'm going to steal your man, you stole my man, Lifetime drama movie, and I can't wait. You know I loved The Girl on the Train last year. These are my kind of movies where they're just schlocky, like you just want to drink wine and yell at it with the girls. So I'm seeing that this week.
How do you think Rosario Dawson is going to kill her?
Oh, I'm expecting, like, I'm just hoping maybe Fate of the Furious, we punch her head off, like something like that. I hope it's a good scene because Katherine Heigl, she needs to be the villain.
Because everybody hates her.
Yes. And I think that's why I'm going to like this, is because I think she's now realizing what she needs to do, and I'm here for it.
I think Rosario Dawson there's going to be a fight in the kitchen, and I think one of the kitchen cabinets is going to have a glass window, and that's going to break, and she's going to stab her in the neck.
I'm pretty sure that happened in Single White Female. I'm pretty sure that happened in the Bows Break.
I think it was a piece of glass to the neck. That I will take that for $500.
Wow, that was your clue thing. It was Rosario Dawson in the kitchen with a glass shard.
Oh, man, I don't know. I got the video. They sent me the video of the girl with all the gifts, the zombie movie, where she is a zombie, but she has the cure, so they have to keep her alive.
Ooh, that should be interesting to see.
So I'm gonna watch that this week, and then we're inching closer to Guardians.
Yes, Guardians, the testers are come out. People are starting to see reactions. We'll see. Rumor 5 post-credit scenes. I'm going to kill myself. That is insane. That is Deadpool level of, like, tacky over the top.
You know what that means, like, though, is we are so going to get yelled at in that screening.
Because we're going to talk in between one of them, and they're going to yell at us. Oh, boy.
EJ and Matt, shut up. Like, it's credits, you turd. God. Hi, EJ. You have a good weekend.
Thank you so much, my friend. You too.
Hey, Matt. We survived another episode. Oh, no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at @monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at @monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at @MatthewSardo. My co-host, EJ, is also on Twitter at @EJChristWithAK. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio, our home. If you have a chance, we would greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 118th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host, EJ Marino, for putting up with me. I made it very tough today.
Yeah, I was not expecting anger from Matt. I was expecting happier Matt, and then I was like, oh no, please don't yell.
This is what happens when we take a week off, man. We can't do it. Jeff Shade is the creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The staff at Visual Realm built our website and gives us up and running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.